Welcome, everyone, to the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School Members Call for the month of October 2018. I'm Kayla Castell here with Daniel Jamario, and we're going to share with you what's happening this coming month. But before we jump in to that, we'll just do a couple of quick announcements. One is that if you're anywhere near or feeling inspired to attend the live event that we're doing at the University of Earth, October 26th to the 28th, on the elements and a lot of the Shamanic Mystery School, Shamanic Astrology Mystery School Council is helping to present that. We've been working on it for months. It's been very fun. So I'll be there. They'll be there. We'll have a. It's going to be very profound experience for people. So we'd love to have you join us. And there's details on the in the email that I sent today to everybody, and also on the website. Then the other thing is that we have two teleclasses coming up. One in October 16th, we'll be looking at Jupiter's move into Sagittarius, and then in November we'll be looking at the nodal movement into the Cancer Capricorn shift from the Leo Aquarius where we've been into Cancer Capricorn. So we always like to look at that. And then the other thing for everybody to know is that we're very soon going to be starting a new Venus synodic cycle. And so if you're interested, and I think I sent a link to that as well, to do the journey ceremonially, it's the first time that Venus has rose as morning star, will rise as morning star in Libra since 1863. And it also just so happens to be the overtone or meta goddess that was the one that was on the world stage when the United States made their Declaration of Independence. So we're really excited about this particular cycle and what's possible with that. So we'd love to have you join us. So I think that's all I have. Daniel, did you have any announcements?
Well, just simply to remind people that there will in fact be the 5-day course that I will be there for. I'm the only one in the U.S. actually in 2019 there at your house. The enhancements to the shamanic astrology paradigm. So it's a lot of new, you know, this paradigm keeps organically evolving. And we're going to also be looking at the events of 2020 and some other surprises. And that'll be there at the end of February. And then we have a weekend night sky cosmology course following that. So if you are looking, if you want to be an in-person group, which is what I love the most, then that's the one. And
right.
I think we already have a lot of signups for it.
We do, and we have early registration lasting extra special early registration lasting till October 15. So if you want to take advantage of that, we'd love to have you do that. So. Okay, so I think we're ready to jump into the month. Yeah.
Well, yeah, so I always like to begin by just looking at what's happening with the visible planets. Mercury is not at a time of visibility prominence. I won't say as we begin the month, because here we are, September 25th. Wait a minute. It's 24th where you are. Yeah. So this is the earliest we've actually done one of these. So at this time right now, Mercury, it happens to be in its what we call the psychopomp phase. It's on the other side of the sun and not visible. And for us Northern Hemisphere people, I'm still in the Northern Hemisphere. I'm 14 degrees north latitude. This is not one of the better evening visibility times for Mercury. It will technically be visible in the evening sky in October, but not in a really prominent way.
Like Venus, I believe, when they're saying that October 4th, so somewhat early in October, technically Mercury will become visible, but maybe not because it's a little elusive.
It's not one of its better apparitions. Venus, which is actually just last week, Venus was at her maximum brightness. And I had an opportunity to see that when I was out in the desert last week. But now Venus is setting, fading from the evening sky really, really fast. And because during this time period, Venus is in the sign of Scorpio, that that part of the sky is at the southern part of the zodiac. So that it's for those in the southern hemisphere, all October there will be still pretty good visibility. But in the northern hemisphere, it's going to really seem to disappear pretty fast. I mean, it's technically up until around the 22nd of October. But just if you see it in the evening sky now, just notice from night to night how rapidly it's sinking toward the horizon. Then Mars, actually, over this next month, loses half of its brightness. I don't know how many of you had an opportunity to see the exact Moon-Mars conjunction last week. It's really quite stunning because that was happening on the day that Mars was at its closest point to the Earth. You could really see how it was as bright as Jupiter, as those string of pearls were strung across the sky from Venus to Jupiter to Saturn to Mars. Quite a beautiful alignment. But we'll be losing that magical, visible alignment as we go into October up to November. But Mars is losing its half its brightness from minus 1.3 to minus 0.6. And you can notice that as Mars now is beginning to distance himself from the Earth during this part of the cycle, although he will be dominant in the evening sky for another 9 or 10 months. Jupiter is now getting lower and lower and lower in the west. It's still at minus 1.7, still quite bright, and you'll soon be able to see that it will outshine Mars. As Mars dims, but it'll be seen low in the west, and then by November we'll be losing Jupiter as it goes into its underworld phase. Meanwhile, Saturn is fading from plus 0.5 to plus 0.6, and it's setting during the month, over the coming month, from 11, it starts out setting about 11 p.m., and then by the beginning of November, it'll set about 9 p.m. So at least Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn will still be pretty prominent in the evening sky. But as we get right near the end of the month, as we get up to November 1st, well, then we have a big change, and we'll be looking at what happens with Venus around that time as we go through this call today. It's a pretty remarkable shift in the way the feminine principle of both men and women happen on the planetary stage. There are two different planetary station changes. Venus will go stationary retrograde on the 5th of October, and we'll be talking about that in more depth here shortly. And Pluto will go stationary direct just in a few days now, on September 30th. The only other things to mention here, I'm not going to go through the exact placements of all the planets from the beginning of the month to the end of the month, but I did want to note several punctuation points here. Which is that the nodes begin, I mean, today as we speak, the nodes of the moon are at 422 Leo, 422 Aquarius. As we get to November 1st, now the nodes are moving pretty fast as we're leaving behind the eclipse season, and it will come up to 0 Leo 37, Leo Aquarius 37, and then soon we'll go into the next signs. You know, the nodal axis stays in a pair of signs for about a year and a half. So we're going to be having a shift in that. And then there's some details that we'll talk about as we go through the different days of the month involving Chiron and where it's stationed. I know Kaylin had been doing some research on that particular issue, and we'll discuss that here shortly. But maybe I'll just start off here by the September 25th events, and then I'll turn it over to you, Kaylin. So we have the full moon here, just a few hours from how we're talking right now, at 2 Aries, 2 Libra. And I do suggest that those who are on this call can access the written material on that. There's different ways to tune in to this full moon relative to the new moon from last month. There's some affirmations, there's ways of tuning in, ways of understanding the nature of a full moon within the shamanic astrology paradigm. I might want to make reference to some of that as we get to the new moon of October, the Libra new moon. So please do reference. There's several pages written on how to work with the lunar cycle over the month of these calls. And then there's another rather major turning point that's happening September 25th to the 25th, and that is the ending and the beginning of one of the most important portions of the Mars cycle. Many of you do know already that Mars began a new 26-month synodic cycle, where we have a new symbol, a new archetype of the masculine principle for both men and women. Now the exploration has to do with the sign of Aquarius. But it's like right now, depending on where you are in the world, either, you know, today, tomorrow, is when Mars has returned to the exact degree it was when it was an opposition point, and which was the technical beginning point of this new Mars cycle in Aquarius. So we actually are beginning right now, and over the next 10 months, Mars is in that phase of it called the challenges of Mars, which actually runs from September 25th until July 17th, 2019. And more about that when we get to the Moon-Mars conjunction coming up October 18th in Aquarius. And then last but not least, big stuff just today and tomorrow, Sun square Saturn at 3 Libra, 3 Capricorn. So these are there's a lot of energy happening, and if we kind of synthesize all three of those. Turn it over to you, Carolyn. We're by the way, for those listening, we are today at remote locations. So I'm not looking at Kaylin right now, although we did have the opportunity to be together for that magical 13 days in Ireland.
Yeah, that was so amazing. Oh, my gosh. So I guess maybe since we're at the full moon right now, it might be good to talk about a little bit about the fact that this full moon is with Chiron. And the exact equinox point when the sun reaches 0 degrees Libra at the September equinox, we've had retrograde Chiron at 0 degrees Aries. And I was just kind of trying to look this up a little bit. It doesn't look like, if we go back to 1800, it doesn't look like we had that happen. And if we go forward about 400 years, it doesn't look like it happened again. So this is a rare event to have Chiron at an equinox point, the zero Aries point, marking that March equinox, and to have the sun at the equinox point simultaneously, and then a couple of days later to have a full moon with the moon very close to Chiron. So it's like there's this big activation taking place. And so one of the ways that I've been tuning into this, and Daniel, you may have another way of speaking about it, but is if we look at Chiron in Aries and Chiron as the shamanic healer and Aries about healing the wounds of injustice that we've been experiencing on this planet for such a long time, It feels like that may be a big piece of what this seven-year journey through Aries is about, and there's this huge activation that's taking place with that, with the equinox and the full moon amping up that intention. So that's kind of how I've been feeling into it. So you might have some other insights about that.
No, that's good. But I also would like to refer people to our most, we recently did a whole teleclass just on the ingress of Chiron into Aries.
Yes. Yeah, that we did that back in April, but it's going to be relevant for the next 7 years. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that or to be a part of that, then we'd highly recommend that you do that. And of course, it helps support the school when you do that. Daniel and I just volunteer our time for these things, so we don't personally benefit from it, but the school does, so that's good.
The fact that also happening within the few hour time frame of the full moon, and that turning point in the Mars cycle that I mentioned, Mars full speed ahead, you know, into this Aquarian investigation, is the Sun square Saturn, and there are two of those every year. So, I mean, it's not hugely rare. It's called a Saturn quadrature with the Sun, meaning 90-degree angle. And then usually when that occurs, that you have this, we could say, crisis in action regarding the ideals of Libra, and we can say what Saturn, positively or negatively thinks about that. Most everybody who follows these calls knows that one of the major contributions, I believe, of our school is a revision of how we perceive both Capricorn and Saturn. But whenever you have a square like this, that it can include the resistance to change, and certainly there's a lot of evidence in the world having to do with resistance to change, but also the idealism around it, which is to create a new structure, a new set of rules, a new set of ways of looking at what responsibility can be, making, you know, basically a concern for all the Earth's peoples and the Earth herself, and so this full moon illumination point in Aries with Chiron, Libra Aries, Sun and the Moon, and then we have the Sun square Saturn. So it really does, I think, symbolize that standoff between the kind of the older ways of looking at things and the necessity for a new way of having Earth's peoples be with each other.
Yeah, you know, Daniel, because I know that Saturn is at early degrees, like around 2 degrees of Capricorn. So it's in an almost precise square to to the full moon and Chiron.
Right.
Yeah, so it's definitely a huge opportunity for us. And, you know, the squares, one of the things to know is that the Sun is always square Saturn, either right before it goes retrograde or right after it's gone direct, or within a few weeks of that time. And so it kind of symbolizes that, especially for Saturn, because it's just gone direct, is that it's now moving ahead more fully into whatever's next. And so whatever we're imagining and holding in our consciousness and intention is getting that acceleration as well in this new moon time or full moon time.
Yeah, all these configurations that are happening, I always look at the U.S. chart and the fact that the United States chart has Venus at 3 Cancer.
Yes.
So I mean, it's kind of right in the crosswires of this whole thing.
Yeah. Wow. I know, it's so amazing.
We ain't seen nothing yet, because then the whole Saturn configuration moving into, you know, further along into Capricorn by January, February, then, you know, Saturn is exactly opposite the U.S. Sun. And
right.
and And the nodal return is still happening to the U.S. chart. Anyway, so that's just some additional thoughts there, because a lot of times these things we notice, like particularly with the outer planets, have to do with longer time periods of history. You know, as they often inform us about, you know, the next year, you know, the time period we're in, and not just like these 2 or 3 days. And then that brings us then to the September 30th event, which is the Pluto stationary direct. I think it's important to know when that, where that is happening. 1845 Capricorn. And so Pluto is not going to be going further back than that now. It's like full speed ahead, up into 19, 20, 21, 22. And again, referencing the U.S. chart, that Pluto on the U.S. chart is 27 Capricorn. So you can see it's only a few years before Pluto will be doing its return cycle to the U.S. chart, so-called Pluto return. So when you have a stationary direct for an outer planet like Pluto, you can't say, well, it's just like, you know, 3:11 p.m. or something. I mean, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's a period of days. I mean, basically, in a sense, weeks, really, where Pluto is kind of like just stuck at the same point, the same degree, almost the same minute for like a couple of weeks. So at the precise point is on the 30th, where it goes stationary direct, and then it's just going to keep moving up forward into Capricorn. Looking ahead, Saturn will be with Pluto in 2020 in the 20 degrees of area of Capricorn. So this, I think, is a pretty critical turning point in the Pluto cycle.
Yeah, you know, I just want to confirm, Daniel, what you're saying, because Pluto entered the 18-degree mark. It went into 1859, you know, retrograding back to the 18-degree mark at the end of August, like August 30th. It's been at the 18-degree mark all of September. It'll be there all of October, and it doesn't move to 19 degrees until the 1st of November. So that's a long time to be hanging out at that specific degree. I mean, it's changing minutes, but, you know.
Right.
It's right there for a really long time.
It's also very close to a planetary node also. That's another important symbol. We haven't really integrated that into the paradigm too much yet, but one of my astrologer buddies, he puts his full attention on the movement of the planetary nodes, not the lunar nodes, the planetary nodes, and both Saturn and Pluto are very close to their planetary nodes at this point.
Right.
Okay. So, in a sense, we have this Plutonian energy, like very stationary, sticking around the same degree in minutes. How would that apply to individuals listening? Well, if you've got something on your own horoscope that is in a few degrees of there, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, in household or culture bearer signs, that is to say Capricorn, Cancer, Libra, Aries, well, then you would be in a major cycle with this.
In fact, Pluto went retrograde on April 22nd at 21:17 Capricorn. So anything between, definitely between 18 and 21, you're in major.
22, even 22.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Major time for you.
So as we go ahead to October 4th, then that'll be the next conjunction of the Moon with Mars. Now, this is the first Moon-Mars conjunction following this. There is something going on with the Moon on the 4th at 8 Aquarius. What was that?
I I do know that that's the day that Mercury is supposed to be entering into the evening sky on October 4th. There might be something else going on there, too.
It was kind of fuzzy after my jet lag. what in the world did I see for that? Well, forget about it. No big deal.
The moon is with the north node on our third, your fourth. So maybe you were looking at that.
No, I saw what it was. It was moon opposite Mars, but not a big deal. All right, let's move on to October 5th, and this is something quite significant. So take it away with Venus stationary retrograde at 10 Scorpio.
Yes. So Venus will station retrograde about every 19 months, and it always signals that it's the completion of the current 19-month cycle that's happening, as well as the beginning to prepare for the next cycle that is about to emerge onto the world stage. That'll be happening on November 1st. And so it's significant because it's like a completion and a beginning whenever Venus is retrograde. So completing the cycle and preparing for the new cycle to happen. And it's going retrograde in Scorpio. It will also be conjunct the Sun in Scorpio. Daniel and I were talking about this a little bit earlier about how some other more mainstream astrologers are looking at the new Venus cycle as having the Scorpio overtone or metagoddess on the world stage or the Venus star points. You know, they just use the easy way of looking at the Sun conjunction. And when Venus is retrograde and conjunct the Sun, it is in the metamorphic underworld. It is in this transformative place. However, this time when Venus rises and is visible, and what the ancient people looked at was when Venus became visible as the place to start the cycle. So that's the practice that we have adopted for the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. That will be at 28, almost 29 degrees of Libra. So the first time since 1863 that Venus has risen is rising as morning star in the sign of Libra, where we're looking at the relational goddess, the conscious, co-creative, collaborative, cooperative expression of the feminine being on the world stage. And it's probably the first time in a long time, because if we look back into the 1800s, actually that was like a 104-year time period that started in the 1767, that Venus was in Libra. And the challenge of that time was that it wasn't really possible for the divine feminine to have a conscious equal relationship with the divine masculine. It's much more possible now. So part of what we'll be doing is looking at how do we release all of the ways that hasn't been possible, that's happened over however many thousand years, 5,000 years or whatever of the patriarchy, and how does Venus step into the strength and power of being the relational goddess? And what's interesting about this particular time as well is that we're completing with the Aries cycle. In 2025, it won't be Aries, it'll be Pisces. So it's the handoff between Aries to Libra, and it's the only time. I looked back and found that it happened 251 years ago, and it'll be 251 years before it happens again, where you have that handoff between Aries to Libra. And that feels really significant as well. Pretty amazing.
If we look at this, the whole time period of the stationary retrograde, beginning on the 5th at 10 Scorpio, then actually the conjunction, the interior conjunction that will happen on the 26th at 3 Scorpio. And then when it goes direct, it's a 25 Libra. You know, so we have the point of emergence I mean, November 1st is the emergence date at 2954 Libra. And then by the time it goes direct, it's still Libra. You know what I mean? So I think just another clue that we're really talking about Libra as the new expression of the feminine.
And it's going to be with the star Spica when Venus right. goes direct, hanging out with Spica. So how could we not imagine that it's the divine feminine and her relational expression? That, you know, what's the highest possibility for that? You know, the most sacred expression of that possible.
It's certainly the whole time period of the transformation, of the metamorphosis, of the chrysalis, of this whole magical alchemical time frame from the retrograde point where she is still visible for a while, and then the time when she disappears into the interior underworld, and then rising in that very, very, very initial point in the sign of Libra. Profound, incredible scorpionic transformation taking place. So we don't want to downplay the Scorpio part of it, but it's all designed to create this well-needed change into a gilanic, a cooperative, collaborative, conscious equal partner and personal version of the goddess.
Yes, beautiful. Yeah, it's so exciting. I'm just amazingly excited about it. And the other thing that's happening is that Venus will oppose Uranus on the October 31st, just before the official rising. You know, that Sky and Telescope says Venus might be visible in the morning sky on the 31st, but for sure on the 1st of November. And so we have this new cycle beginning also with Venus opposite Uranus, suggesting that we have this opportunity to really change, have a whole new vision, and be avant-garde and, you know, moving ahead with the ideals of relational, the relational mysteries in a whole new way. It's very exciting.
And as if to further amplify these Libran themes, we've got the new moon, October 8th, 1548 Libra. If you're in the Pacific zone, it's 8:47 p.m. On October 8th. There's several pages you can access about this, but I did want to just give you just a couple of bullet points if you haven't had a chance to access the written material. You know, on a new moon, these are the days extremely useful for envisioning how you would like the next month to go for you. Imagine planting seeds, setting intentions, time for going within, taking some time to yourself, creating your intentions with as much lucidity and clarity as possible. So there's a few possible themes that you could be looking at. Are you happy with your friendships? Do you desire more or less? Do you feel that you have the right partner, or do you long for one? Are you too sensitive to what you perceive that what others think of you? Do you question whether you could ever be loved for just you? Do you long for that? Do you accommodate yourself to others just to please them? Do you have challenges making up your mind? Consider seeking out a new friend. Consider whether your friends and partners actually love and value you for yourself, not your looks, talents, resume, or what you do for them. And lastly, consider having an additional social activity. You know, these are all kinds of seed planting kind of things you can do, and clearly augmented by this whole big change that Venus is going through.
Indeed. And those things that Daniel just shared will be posted by the first of the month on the page where you'll access the recording. So just know that you can have access to that.
Did you have anything else to add regarding the new moon?
No, I think that's good. I think we've talked a lot about the relational pieces, and I guess there is one piece I do want to add, and that is really looking at our relationship to ourselves and to the world, to nature, and one of the things that was really stood out for me when we were in Ireland was how the relationship to nature was a way that they disconnected people from magic, from, you know, from being able to work their own magic, because then if people could work their own magic, they wouldn't be so easy to control. So there was this whole thing about disconnecting people from nature, so they'd be disconnected from their magic and be disempowered. So how can you have a powerful relationship when you don't even have that piece? So I think that's another piece that we could look at planting seeds around for the relational part. You know,
well, what comes up for me when you say that is that when you go to these places like New Grange and some of those other really large megalithic projects that were done 5,000-6,000 years ago, that was not slaves that did that. That was the collaboration of a whole community in connection with nature, that it was an act of love. It was an act of love in order to create these monuments to the way that the sun and the moon enter into the goddess, into the earth, a way of balancing the masculine and feminine energy, solar and lunar energy and star and stellar and planetary energy into the earth. So to me, that was it's just a beautiful imagery of how Scorpio and Libra can work together from love.
Yes, and that was again part of the, like, how do we? They retold the story to make it sound like there was dominators and slaves and, you know, that kind of thing, rather than the this idea that you were just sharing, Daniel, this sense that they did this because it was their love of nature and the cycles and the seasons and, you know, how to have a more powerful relationship with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we think it's slaves that did it, then we may not be as inspired.
Or, you know, well, there's certainly, you know, you go to Egypt and you see the latter Egypt culture, you know, with the whip and chain, you know, you see the Ramses guys, you know, I mean, all over the side of the pyramids or the, you know, the hieroglyphs, is the whip and chain types. So I'm not referring to that latter time period, but when these things were done in community the only hierarchy that existed were those that just had some special knowledge. It had nothing to do with who had the bigger army or, you know, the most amount of gold, because at that time in history, the only use of metals was for doing magic, not for wealth. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but then following the new moon, though, is a very, very rare situation where Venus, having already gone retrograde on the 5th, there will still be a moon-Venus conjunction, which will be potentially visible. A little harder if you're far north, but a good portion of the planet we'll be able to see Moon conjunct Venus on October 10th, which is not technically the 8th gate, as it were, but it still could be thought of as a really unique point of, like, of the summation of the entire journey of Venus, kind of a flowering and a fulfillment of what the previous one was, and as now already preparing for rebirth into the next version of the feminine.
And
that's
at
11 Scorpio.
Right, and that just so happens to be your birthday, Daniel.
Yes.
Great symbol for your birthday, for your next solar year.
Yeah, that good, great old Scorpio-Libra combo. You know, that's one of the ones that I've been interested in my whole life. And then following that visible Moon-Venus conjunction, which is kind of an in-betweener, you know, it's not one of the gates, it's still visible. Then the very next day, Sun square Pluto.
And Moon conjunct Jupiter and Scorpio, the last one before it goes into Sagittarius. So more of that energy.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are two Sun-Pluto squares every year, you know, so this is, we already referred to what happened with the Sun square Saturn. There's two of those every year. That happened, that's happening like today, tomorrow. But there we have another one of those points where there's a tension, like a standoff or Rudyard called a crisis in action between Pluto and the Sun. So we have the Libra Sun and we have Pluto in Capricorn. So the inquiry there is the one that's just, you know, how do Libra and Capricorn get along with each other and or not? And maybe the simplest thing I could say about that is that the intention of Libra, more than any other place on the wheel, is the desire to be personal. Capricorn, on the other hand, of all the different places on the wheel of life, is the one that is least personal. So you have this attempt to synthesize that detached coolness of Capricorn with the desire to really just be loved personally and to connect in a more equal, a collaborative way, which is what the Libra mysteries are about. So you have that, a little bit of a tension around that during those days.
And also the opportunity to see where it's the shadow has been expressing rather than the healthier sense of that, and then to be able to transform that with our attention and our awareness.
I think you had something then, Mercury conjunct Venus, which I'm potentially able to be seen, but well, it's going to be a tricky one. It's not the best time period to see Mercury, and Venus has practically disappeared at that point. But that'll be happening at 9 Scorpio on October 15th, and then at around the 19th through the 22nd of October is when Venus really will, all parts of the Earth, disappear from the world stage, entering into that interior underworld, alchemical, metamorphic transformation that she goes through every 19 months.
Yep. And
I'll also mention now,
transformation, it's only like 7 or 8 days, so it happens very fast. That metamorphic shift happens very fast. And so if somebody's born with Venus retrograde near the Sun, within 10 degrees of the Sun, they're in that rare place of that transformational place. And we don't run across people all that often, and we do get them occasionally, that have that placement, because it's like maybe 1% or it's less than 1% of people will have it. So it's pretty remarkable.
And it will be the ones that they're in that in-between zone when it's retrograde, still visible. The time period where it's retrograde, absolutely not visible.
Right.
And then time frame of just a couple of days before the visibility happens, still retrograde, but still like a really small percentage of individuals. And then that is also in a much larger time frame. One of the more remarkable things the ancients looked for was if you happen to be Venus on the inside track, that is to say the interior underworld, in between the Earth and the Sun, if there was a Venus transit happening at that time, right? You know, or that if there was an eclipse that happened at that time where Venus became somehow visible during that time period, that was one of the most unique, and it's not happening this time, but one of the most... Right. Unique events the ancients ever thought could ever happen.
The last time that did happen was in 2012, and it won't happen again for 105 years from that time. So probably not in a lifetime.
The very place we saw it from no longer exists.
Right? I know, that's so amazing.
Green Lake on the Big Island. It just all evaporated. That's where we were when we saw it.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. So, and then you probably also want to talk, Daniel, about the Moon conjunct Mars on the 18th.
Right. So this is the first so-called labor or challenge of Mars in this portion of the new Mars cycle, which is highlighting the sign of Aquarius and Mars still being in Aquarius. One of the ways you can tell which archetype is most dominant in any one of these Mars synodic cycles is the fact that Mars stays 7 or 8 months in the same sign. and so it's in Aquarius for a very long time. And on the very first moon conjunction with Mars in this phase of his cycle is on October 18th, and it's in Aquarius. And so that would have just like a punctuation point. Why is it a punctuation point? Because you look at the sky, and there's the moon, so which is, we could say, the whole history of humanity is represented there by that moon in Aquarius, and it's right with Mars, the new evolving expression of the masculine in both men and women, being highlighted in Aquarius. And it's beyond the scope of this talk we're having right now. I want to reference you all to some teleclasses that have been associated with Mars going into Aquarius, but also Uranus moving into Taurus, which are, I think, some of the more symbolically and archetypally important features of our current time period, of both the shadow and the light of Aquarius.
Right, and then, you know, it's interesting that right before the full moon in Taurus on the 24th, the evening before, Sun and Uranus are opposite each other.
Right.
And then the moon, of course, will be conjunct Uranus at that full moon, or, you know, within exactly conjunct within like an hour or so before the exact full moon. So Uranus is a big player.
Yeah, and where the sun moves into Scorpio, you know, and on the 23rd, same time the sun is opposing Uranus, and then we just mentioned the moon conjunct Mars and Aquarius. So we got this whole thing with Aquarius, Scorpio, and Taurus, and then as you point out here, the full moon then at one Taurus. You know, so there's really a lot going on with this particular inquiry regarding what is the Taurian contribution and what is the Aquarian contribution, and make sure one is not more than the other.
Right.
What I mean by that, I mean, again, I'll reference these other full presentations we've done on this, but it's the it's really the contrast between our embodiment being physical beings, we could say carbon-based beings that actually live and die and live and die and birth and death and birth and death, and the vanity of the ego of the Aquarius, which is, well, let's just all be AI and put our consciousness into a computer chip and live forever. You know, I mean, so these are the kind of things that are going to be in the air big time over these next couple of years. Carbon versus silicon, I guess you could say.
Right.
Okay, so that full moon is on Wednesday, October 24th, and you can reference the written material that goes along with this call. There's a lot that I wrote up about that full moon, and that you can work with. And then October 26th, then is the date the Sun-Venus conjunct, interior conjunction, the one that many other people who now are working with synodic cycles believe is the beginning. And so that's why they just think, well, yeah, we're still in the Scorpio one. So that's okay. The reason they think that is because of the conjunction is at three Scorpio. You know, I guess they think that there's another one or two before it becomes Libra.
Yeah.
So we're harbingers we think we're on the leading edge, but funnily enough, being on the leading edge simply means that we're accessing what humanity did for thousands and thousands and thousands of years by looking for Venus visibly rising.
You know, the other thing is that I think some of the people who use the Sun conjunctions with Venus and Mercury and Mars and whatever as the place to start, it's easy to run a computer program and find that out. But to work with the actual rising into the morning sky, that, you know, that 10 degrees, whatever that is, not as easy to figure out. So they're just going with easy, really, because you can't see the Sun and Venus together. And then they just simply look at the Sun-Venus conjunction while retrograde is the beginning of the morning star phase, and the Sun-Venus conjunction not retrograde is the beginning of the evening star phase. And They don't ever look at the underworld aspect of it. They're not even including that in their understanding. And of course, we know from the story of Inanna that the underworld part of it, especially the 60 to 90 day underworld, is so important to our understanding of what's happening with the Venus initiation.
Then let's see. Then after October 26th, the things that show up are Mercury conjunct Jupiter, 28 Scorpio. It's October 29th. Mercury into Sag on October 30th. Venus into Libra, October 31st. And that, and then on November, looking ahead, then the Venus retrograde goes direct on November 16th, the 25 Libra. So let's see what might be good to talk about here. Maybe it could be a good time to see if anybody has any questions, comments.
Absolutely. So the Q&A has been started. If you press star 6 and follow directions, it'll put you in the queue, and we can hear from you if you have questions, insights, ahas, and perspectives to share. We would love to hear from you. So nobody has jumped in yet. We might give it another minute or two, but if we don't have anybody that has anything, then we might be wrapping this up early.
Yeah, this is a time also for the members. I mean, this is a members' benefit. And keep in mind that when you come on these calls each month, we do leave this time for you to interact and ask questions and get involved.
Have questions about how this affects you personally, too, or insights about this, then we'd like to hear that. Okay, so it looks like I'm not sure who this is, but we'll find out here. Hello.
Hi.
It's Emma.
Yes, it is Emma. It's very interesting. I'm completely on a cell phone now, no more land-based phone. But this whole thing about Libra, and my mind has been in sort of a half-dream state when I wake up in the morning looking at Venus in the Libra and Mars in the Aquarian overtone. And both of these archetypes are very important in my personal chart. And I've been toying with all different kinds of ideas of how do we get this communication going between Libra and Aquarius, two very, very different parts of beingness. And
yes.
And I haven't really come up with anything solid, but in my dream state, I keep on getting little glimpses of how they can relate. And once I get it figured out, I'll let you know.
Emma, thank you for bringing that up. It's certainly been a major theme in my own life. Having so much Libra, having so much a commitment to what I think is the essence of Libra, and then the fact that Aquarius, using the traditional model being in trine, even though Aquarius is so different from Libra, a great number of my personal relationships have been men and women with a lot of Aquarius. So this dynamic between the two of them is so important, and the thing. Where I'm coming from on it is, Aquarius has high ideals, even high ideals about relationship. The avant-garde, progressive, bigger story. Let's do it a different way. Let's do it in a free way. But Libra, and this is the bottom line for Libra, can't be about just ideals or mental. It has to be about another person or other people. I mean, it's not a thought form in the sense of the ideal people in relationship, but it's like, wait a minute, this is a real human being here who wants to be gotten on a personal level. It's bringing back in the strength and the health of honoring another human being as a human being, not just the thought of a human being, okay, or like the vision of let's all get along, but rather, okay, one person at a time, let's care about that other person and where they're really coming from.
You know, one of the other things, Daniel, when you look at Venus in air sign, Mars in air sign, and yet how different these two air signs, going from householder to a free electron. It's probably harder for me to actually visualize how this is going to work. And I would rather take air and put it with earth or fire or something like that. But this, within its own trine, I mean, rather than looking at it as this, the way traditional astrology looks at trines as being this magical, everything is a benefit.
Right.
No way, you know. And I think you feel that, and very, very much because of your activity with it, I sort of get a little bit of a different look. We'll get a different look at it. And I don't think I'm going to be able to make any particular conclusions until I really integrate and get into this cycle, especially during the time when Venus is in Libra.
Yeah, it's a planetary inquiry, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I could sit here and say that, yeah, the traditional model would say they're a trine. Easy, right? But in fact, some of these sextiles and some of the trines have some of the greatest archetypal differences. And so, as you rightfully pointed out here, Aquarius is the highest end of the spectrum about free electron. No bonding. Then you have the Libran one, which is about really truly bonding, knowing yourself through another or through others. So they stand at very great distance from each other. At least it doesn't appear to be a combination that has historically been about a war. It's not like let's kill the enemy or it's not a contrast that's loaded with drama, but it requires like stretching, Aquarius stretching into understanding that Libra is not codependence, right? And Libra stretching into, hey, we can really value people as persons and at the same time have a certain degree of freedom involved in it also.
So how does this work out in a sacred marriage energy, if one is doing their sacred marriage and they had one in these two air signs? To me, it would be a harder sacred, more difficult to get to that sacred marriage than is if, like, I have Venus in Aquarius and Mars in Capricorn.
I don't know whether we can say relatively one is harder than the other. In fact, I think that they actually give each other clues. The sacred marriage for Libra is getting to the place where you love yourself as the person that you most love being in relationship with, right? Then it ends up looking almost like Aquarius at that point. But then Aquarius, the sacred marriage of Aquarius, is also then to be open to the more advanced views and higher views about all forms of life on the planet, including that the Libra, in fact, could be something other than a codependent weakness. I run into people of the younger generation that are just convinced, due to the mainstream view of Libra, that Libra is patriarchal, and that it's almost like it needs to die. You know, Libra has no value. You know, so boy, do I ever have to I have to counter that quite often.
Yeah, I understand that one. Yeah, and I think I've basically because I have Libra as my rising sign and Jupiter there in Libra, I've been forced, since I've been studying with you and Kaylin, to really go in and look how my Jupiter in Libra, how my Libra energy is functioning, and how much I've stolen from other parts of my personality to sort of make up for what I thought was a deficiency in ability to relate.
Yeah. Well, you've got Libra. You're Libra rising? And Jupiter
Libra rising. And Jupiter in Libra, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, look at your life's journey. I mean, I would tell this to somebody who's in their 20s or 30s, you know, that it's a beginner place. It's investigating something new. You can't expect to be an expert at it to begin with. And that's certainly been my story, too.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful life, isn't it?
You sound quite articulate and brilliant today. Thank you for your
thank you very much. But
awesome.
I've been going through some metamorphosis lately, and where before I was taking little baby steps, it all of a sudden it's been giant steps. Things are beginning to become a picture for me finally, where it's basically my whole life has been jumping from one lily pad to another, you know, falling in love with whatever was coming along the way. And it's like now they're all beginning to blend into a pudding.
Considering we're talking about this issue, I mean, it just occurred to me as I'm looking at all my notes, one feature, it's happening like right now, and this week, is the Mars conjunction with the South Node, which is an extremely intriguing backdrop to everything we've been talking about. This came up in one of our teleclasses. It's a good number of months. It's like a triple thing that happens of the three times that the South Node is in alignment with Mars, and now is one of them.
Wow. And that's one of the things that the class that we're just finishing up now on Living Wisdom. I just never could wrap my mind around the synthesis of all of these beautiful energies going on. How do I take them together and make a nice meal? And it's coming together now. Little by little, magic will happen over the next year.
Hey. That's awesome.
Anyone else out there want to weigh in?
Yes. So thank you, Emma. We're going to go to the next person.
Okay.
So I don't know who you are.
Oh.
Who is it?
Hi, it's Linda from Portland.
Oh, cool.
Hey, I'm not sure I exactly heard correctly in the beginning with the householder range from 17 to 22 degrees, if that was related to Pluto as well.
Yes.
So I have a question. My Venus is 20 degrees Cancer, and then also my Sun's Moon is 19 degrees Cancer. So I was just kind of curious of how that would play out, like, you know, in the different positions like that.
Well, just that all three of those, did you start off with saying Venus was there? Is that what you said?
Yeah, my Venus is 20 degrees Cancer.
20, and then you said the Sun and the Moon also.
Oh my! I meant my Sun as in my child. The difference between his Moon is 19 degrees Cancer, and I was kind of curious for each of us if there's a lot of difference in how we're affected.
Well, for all of, you know, for each piece of that, it is a major Pluto cycle. I mean, one that at most is twice in a lifetime. I mean, if you include the conjunction and the opposition. And so it is everything that we share about what the nature of a Plutonian initiatory process is. And the simplest way that I have been able to share that is it requires a much longer thing. I mean, this is what would come up, first in any kind of a session. But the three main things are there will be some area, some aspect of the life, where some very important aspect of the life involving those planets, and each of those planets has a different function. In the sign of Cancer with Pluto, opposition, is that there'll be something that's happening where the three main ways of handling challenges don't work. Where there'll be some, you can't power through it, you can't figure it out, and you also can't pretend it's not important. One or more of those things will be taking place. So it's actually a cycle of surrender, of how one uses the experience of some kind of chaos or irrational event to go deeper and to not have it to be something you take personally, because it's never about having done anything wrong or not done enough or haven't been able to figure it out, but rather it's a point of, from a spiritual perspective, it's a point of surrender. And there's no technique for surrender. If there were, then it's not surrender. So it's like maybe another simple way of putting it is that what needs to be composted.
Yeah, so, okay, that makes, I don't know if this sounds right, but I have had a few things going on, and I don't know if it's really denial, but I think it's just allowing them to be, because I don't think,
right.
I don't even know how to deal with them, so I don't know
right.
if that's the same as surrender, or...
Well, yeah, it's basically the events, if there happens to be any of those kind of things happening, beyond your control, chaos, something you can't figure out, something you would normally be able to handle using your skills, Cancerian skill set, then it's kind of like a conspiracy to have it be a situation where you have to surrender. It's kind of like the conditions for surrender. And again, it's not about having. It's not like a bad karma. It's not, oh, I did something wrong. I need to do more. I need to figure it out. I need to be better or anything like that. It's at its worst, it would be like what the ancient traditions and modern spiritual traditions would consider to be the dark night of the soul, which is near the end of the process of enlightenment, not the beginning. So there's a certain kind of let go or surrender that happens in these kinds of Pluto cycles.
So do you think it's a good way to approach that is to, I've sort of just allowed to just let be what's going to be, and in other aspects where maybe I'm having more control, or one of the ways of being able to solve things, evolving those things and just letting the other thing, just realizing I just need to see what happens. Is that a good strategy?
Well, you can't control. That's always a Cancer issue. You can't control the outcome. You can absolutely totally do your best. Cancer wants to provide better nourishment than anyone, and they're willing to put their life on the line for it. But sometimes it's you can't control the outcome, and when that occurs, it isn't because you screwed up or you didn't do enough. It just wasn't, in a sense, it's not about you at that point.
Okay. Well, thank you. That helps. A lot.
Good. Thanks.
That's awesome. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
So I think that's everybody. We did have somebody else, but they dropped out. So I think we're ready to wrap it up, and just hoping everybody has a fabulous month, and we'll see you or talk to you, I guess, and won't see you, but as we get towards the end of November on into December. Anything you want to say in closing? Did I say? I meant October into November.
Yeah, no problem.
Right.
All right.
All right. So, all right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye, everybody. Okay. See you later.